Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Michael, how are you?
Dave.
Did you get stuck in the traffic at the Aviva?
There's a lot of Argentinians on the roads, Dave.
A lot of Argentinians on the road, are there now? I want to talk to Michael McCormack here because Breaking Out is the remarkable story of Fergus O'Farrell, a new film that's just been released in the cinema. It tells the story of Fergus O'Farrell, lead singer of influential 90s Irish band Interference. Fergus passed away far too young at the age of 48. And of course, as we find out in the movie, he was meant to die at 18. That's what the doctor said. Yeah, exactly. But in his short life, he inspired a generation of Irish songwriters, including people like Glen Hansard. Glen's all over the movie, really lending his hand big time. He really does. In fact, Fergus O'Farrell's song Gold features in the soundtrack to the Oscar-winning film Once. So, I'll tell you what I'll do. Before I even talk to you about it, I'll give you a little bit of the trailer. Will I give you that, Jim? Okay, this is Breaking Out, the trailer.
All my life, I've looked up to him. I've revered his band, his songs, and his voice.
When Fergus was 8, a specialist said wheelchair by 12 and at 18.
This is a huge eagle of a soul trapped in a very limited physical body.
Music was something that I had to do.
Sorry, it was something completely different. We get it. Well, no, we won't get it.
We will.
No, we won't. What was I going to say? Yeah, Michael, you made all this. My God, talk about a labour of love. You were on with us back about 4 or 5 years ago about this project.
That's right,
and
yeah.
You know how you were trying to get it all together and crowdfunding and money and going to make it and all the rest. And here you are and here it is, basically.
That's it, Dave. Yeah.
Tell me about Breaking Out.
I looked like I was quite mad at the time, but so I started filming in 2004 when I went down to Fergus O'Farrell and Skull, put a camera on him and let him talk for the weekend. And I could nearly see the film at that point. And I knew that I wasn't just going to make a small little documentary about this band that very few people knew and loved. I had first seen them play when I was about 15, 16 at one of the self-aid gigs that were going on around the country. That was a charity thing for the unemployed.
Yeah.
And they took to the stage and he was still standing at the time. And his voice was big and
what
bold.
What you mean by still standing is literally still standing.
Literally still standing, because he was diagnosed at the age of 8, as you said, with muscular dystrophy. So a debilitating disease that attacks the muscles. And so he was soon in a wheelchair. Then he couldn't play the guitar. Then he couldn't play the piano. And then it was fighting. He was fighting to keep his voice for many, many years.
So when you decided to make it, if you've been making this for 10 years, you assumed that you would be making this and Fergus would be there to see it probably?
Yep, 100%.
And yeah. That is not what happened?
No, that's not what happened. I think people have been asking me over the last couple of weeks, you know, was there a lot of pain and there was a lot of pity when you were with Fergus? And I tell them no, I was mostly laughing my head off because he was a very funny guy. Mm. And the muscular dystrophy didn't get in the way at all. And the plan was that this was going to be a film that was going to get his music out to the world because he couldn't get out to the world. But in the last couple of years of his life, the muscular dystrophy really did become a problem, as he says himself in the film. You know, he used to suffer from hangovers. Now he was suffering from the muscular dystrophy. And I think at that point, he was bringing me along for the whole journey, and I didn't realise that.
Right, yeah. Well, it was a life lived through music and for music, no question. But let's just start, for those who don't know him, who was Fergus O'Farrell?
So Fergus O'Farrell, he started out Interference in Clongowes when he was a teenager.
And you have footage of that?
I have footage of that, which we found on a blank VHS. So there was three of them in the band at that stage, James O'Leary, Malcolm McClancy. And when he finished school, much to his parents' chagrin, he went up to Dublin and he ensconced himself in a factory in Dublin called Winstanley's, which was to be Mother Redcaps. And there he started rehearsing with Interference, gathered more musicians around him. And before they'd even played a gig, they were a unit that blew your socks off.
Okay, now you really liked Interference when you saw them first. They blew your socks off, and it was basically Fergus. What was it about him, though? Like, I mean, just you saw him standing, you saw him sitting. Like, tell me about him on that level. Just
yeah,
the force.
He just knew how to. There was an awful lot of mumblers around at the time, Dave. Do you remember? Mumbling was in, and he stood there and he sang and he enunciated every word. So, and the words were important, and the songs seemed to have so much meaning, and they were something different. And he, as as I said in the film again, you know, he was like a honeypot. He would attract people in because, in a way, his personality, he needed people around him to function. He needed people around him to get him up a flight of stairs. He needed people around him to get him onto a stage to sing, to get him back off the stage. And when the muscular dystrophy started kicking in, he needed people there to play the guitar for him, to be, you know, his means to record.
Yeah, Paul Tiernan became like his other person almost at one stage. Yep. You can see that with the performances. Now, the performances, there weren't necessarily that many as such. Like, I mean, for a band who were trying to, like, who would want to tour all the time, there weren't. But there was quite a few on television, weren't there? You were able to pull from a few of those.
Yeah. I'd say they probably had as many performances on television as they did live.
Yeah, right.
I think at the time, strangely enough, RTE and were giving a lot of support to music, and yourself. And so, I had a wealth of material to choose from live performances that they had in the Olympic Ballroom. And there was also gigs in Whelan's that were filmed, and there were gigs in the Bailbucht. And as you said, a lot of home movie footage. So I was able to tell the story of a life, not only from the time that I filmed with him, but before that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is, though, it's a huge ego that he has as well, and a soul trapped in a very kind of a dodgy body is what we're looking at here throughout the movie. So it was a continual losing of things. It might have been stairs first, and then it just got worse and worse all the time. But the support that he's had, certainly this movie shows, from family and friends, it's out there, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's again what Fergus was all about. I mean, the other thing that Paul Tiernan says in the film is that, you know, he didn't know what he gave to you as well. When you were in his presence, he just made you feel like the most important person. That's why people would go, and when he called at whatever time, they'd get down there and try to help and try to get that music done, because his big problem was he was a perfectionist, trying to constantly, you know, work on those songs until he had something perfect to put out to the world, which meant he only released one album in his lifetime with Interference, and the second one was released a year after his death.
Yeah, I mean, like, he didn't want to be a cripple in the wheelchair, as it says in the movie. He wanted to be a singer on the stage. He had a very kind of dynamic physical presence as a front man. So it was cruel, like cruel right all the way through. And yet this movie, it's pretty funny. I mean, there's one bit in the movie that's just hilarious. I don't know what Len Hansard is up to, how he came up with that. But I mean, he must have had a past where he was siphoning petrol out of some people's cars. Tell me about that.
Well,
maybe he didn't.
No, I mean, he was somebody who lived life to the full, and he didn't just put all his energies into his music. He put his energies into people. So, you know, he knew how to have a good time, and if he could, he would have been going around
but
the world having a good
time. But that Glenn has to do.
I'll try and explain that. So towards the end, when he was finding it so hard to sing, he gave me a call about 2 weeks before this. He said, I have this idea. I'm going to get a hose from a hardware store, and I'm going to get Glenn to blow into it to help me to sing.
At the points where his voice needs to be big.
Yes.
Right.
Somebody who knew how his voice was, who would know when to take the breaths and when to blow. I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was dangerous. I couldn't believe he was doing it. But at this stage, he just needed to sing, and he had them coming down. So the frames went down to help him record. And at 2 a.m, after many hours of trying to sing, he turned around and said, we're going to have to use the hose. And that was the first time that Glenn Hansard knew what was going on, or that he had this plan. But he went for it, and I call it the ultimate duet, because at first, as you said, when he was blown and Ferg was trying to take in the air, we were all corpsing ourselves laughing, and it kind of broke the tension from what was a really sad couple of hours where we were worried about him being able to deliver it all. And for whatever reason, the combination of Glenn's breath and just the energy that he got from it, his voice started to get stronger.
Yes, I've never heard it. Like, no, I'm not a medical anything or other, but maybe it's a thing, but I've certainly never seen anything like that before in my life. By the way, we're talking about Breaking Out, which is the movie that's out at the moment. Michael McCormack is the man who put it all together, every single bit of it, with loving care for 10 years, by the way. I mean, Fergus never let disability get in the way of creative output, and that's a very good example of that, isn't it?
Yeah. He always found a way of ploughing on. So people, even when he came up with something as ludicrous as that, as asking somebody to blow into a hose to help him, people knew that there was some method to his madness, that he would always find a way to get the recording down. He wouldn't always find a way to put it out there, but he'd find a way of recording.
I mean, there's one scene in the movie which you've animated.
Yes.
And it seems to me as though Fergus tells a story about how he met the woman he married, And you said, right, I'm going to take that word for word, give it to an animator, and let the animator just make whatever they can out of exactly what's been said. Is that the way it was? Or?
That's the way it was.
It looked like that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the first.
It's a hilarious story.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous story. It's, it's the love story of Fergus and his wife, Meng Lee, where he was over in Cyprus, and he'd after catching a flu, and of course, the flu was very dangerous for somebody with muscular dystrophy, and she was his nurse. She had two words, hello and pain. And over the course of the time in the hospital, they got to know each other. And he, at one stage, got a Chinese dictionary and wrote her a letter. And so there was this beautiful love that was blossoming. I mean, he calls her his nuclear explosion, his happiness. He is a, it was something that needed to be done and told properly. And so they're both interviewed separately and they have their own version of the, of how they met. And then this great young animator called Sean Cunningham put a 2D animation together that really brings it to life.
Yeah, indeed. And like when people talk about like the names, Jeff Buckley have been mentioned, or like as a kind of, like it's kind of like an Irish. I don't know. Could I say that? Would you say? Yeah, it's getting there.
I mean, yeah, the voice. Certainly, when people hear the voice now, when they see Breaking Out, and they're kind of shocked that they haven't heard of Fergus O'Farrell or Interference because of the power of it. But as you well know, you know, there's lots of people out there with huge amounts of talents who get forgotten about. Jeff wasn't one of them. Nick Drake was, I suppose. And then his legacy after that, it grew and grew. But yeah, I think it's the voice that probably gets that comparison with Jeff Buckley. Yeah.
Okay, now Gold is the song that he did or that was there. I mean, like, is that twice in the musical? Or,
yes, it is.
And
yeah.
Once in Once.
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're talking about the movie Once, where Glenn won the Academy Award for the song for the Falling Slowly or whatever. Yeah, right, and then this was in the movie as well, but then it was in the musical twice.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Glenn kept going back to the well and wanted to bring Ferg along with the success he was having. And the great thing about it, then, when the musical was put together, they decided that Gold should be the song that was kind of this big ensemble moment, and also done a cappella again at the start of the second act. So it just gave Ferg a taste of some of the success he hadn't got up to that point. He got to go over to Radio City Music Hall and support the Swell season. And the footage in the movie of him doing that performance kind of says it all. Here's a guy who didn't get onto the big stage as much, but when he got there, he took his chance and he gave it welly.
Yeah, and he's walking down the street with his father in the huge high rises of New York. Here, hold on a second, I'll give you a bit. This is just the Breaking Out bit from, sorry, the Once bit, if that's the right way about it, from Breaking Out.
What happened with Once was that feeling that if you want great songs for your film, call for.
And I love her song.
If someone had told me that the song I wrote was going to be performed at the Tony Awards, dream come true.
Radio City! Which made her fall.
Do you know, Michael, the idea, I presume, with the documentary is to bring people the music of Fergus O'Farrell and Interference. Fair to say that even throughout the 90s, you know, not a lot of people necessarily know them.
No, definitely not. Yeah, they were just one of those unlucky bands. When you're trying to do everything yourself, as I well know, it's very difficult to get your music out there. You might, you know, get the support to record it properly and get it down and getting it out there. But it's actually the promotion of it is what you need. That's where you need the money behind you. So they didn't necessarily have that. But as he says himself, everybody who got a copy of that debut album loved it and passed it round, and people got to know their music that way. And then when they came, when they broke up and came back again in the early 2000s, that, you know, on Other Voices, when they started getting support from Other Voices, then people started discovering them again.
Yeah, but, special program. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, very special program.
Who do you think you are, though? I mean, like what gave you the right to make a documentary? In other words, a roundabout way of saying, what's your background?
So I've spent many years making docs and working in different areas of RTE as a producer. Actually, I started out as a researcher and worked my way up to a producer. So I suppose I learned how to tell stories. That's what I love doing. So whether it's working in entertainment or in documentary, I love to find interesting ways of telling stories. So that's why when I actually sat down with Fergus that time and heard him talking, it was probably the first time that I'd heard a story that immediately said to me, well, this is a feature.
So that was the moment that you said to yourself, I'm going to make a documentary. Or
yeah.
I'm going to make something out of this.
I did it all the wrong way, Dave.
I was just thinking the other way around, all right? Fergus was born in Skull, went back to Skull. So you went down to Skull in Cork to meet him. Tell me about meeting him.
Yeah, so I would have met him over the years as a young man. So when I was 15, 16 and they were playing on the stage, he would get off the stage and get into the wheelchair, and the 15-year-old me would go over and sit down beside him and chew the ear off him, and he couldn't get away, the poor man. So many fans probably did that. But we knew each other to say hello. It wasn't until that time when I went down and sat with him in West Cork and had that chat with him that we got to know each other, and I found out the sort of person he was, which was somebody who could talk over a complete weekend and tell me. He told me a lot of the stories that are in the film. In fact, the first story he ever told me was the story in the ditch where he's coming home.
Wow. Well, hold on, now, wait a minute. The story of the ditch is reconstructed, can I say, in the film.
Yes.
And what do you call him? Jeremy Irons is walking along the road and says, "Get out of that ditch there, for crying out loud. It's the gig you have to go to."
That's it. Yeah.
So, was that a dream?
It can be whatever you want it to be, Dave.
Thanks very much. Okay.
Whatever you want it to be. But basically, the story was one where he was going home at 2 a.m. after having a few drinks, and he was looking up at the stars and going round and round in his electric wheelchair doing 360s, and ended up in a ditch on his head at 2 a.m. in November. And he thought, oh my God, after all the struggle, this is the way it's going to end. And he was there for 4 hours. And he found a way to suddenly start doing vocal exercises to start singing for help. And that's what eventually got him out of there. But at one stage, he thought about giving up because he suddenly, there wasn't a huge amount of times that he talked to me about the struggle.
Yeah.
But he was able to talk to me about it in that way. He was saying, well, here's a moment where I can actually give up and not continue on. But he still found a way. And his line in the film is great. He goes, "I still haven't finished the album, so I have to get out of this ditch."
Right, indeed. Well, let's look, it's a documentary more than well worth seeing. And fair play to you. You done him proud there, Sonny. You really did, no question about it. And by the way, you won the George Morrison Feature Documentary Award at the IFTAs this year. And you were handed that award by me just the other week there. Tell me, what I want to know is now, where is it?
Where is it?
It's holding the toilet door open, is it?
No, actually, it's a gorgeous thing.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. Yeah, it's quite
a gorgeous
heavy.
Thing. Yeah. No, I love it. Yeah.
But you didn't tell me where it is.
At the moment, it's probably in the hands of Karen O'Malley and Element.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, listen. You also won the Best Irish Documentary Award at the 2019 Galway Film Flat. Finally, just very briefly, did Fergus get a chance to see any of it?
Not much.
No. When did he die?
He died in 2016.
Yeah.
Early on in the process, I'd shown him a little bit of the film, but he had started changing the way he was behaving on camera. So we kind of came to an agreement that we wouldn't. And he didn't want to see any. He was living it. Yeah. I call it his greatest performance. He knew exactly what I was going to do. He knew about the animation. He knew about the reconstruction. So he didn't need to see it. He knew what it was.
All right. Well, listen, Michael, thank you very much indeed. Fair play to you. Michael McCormack, it is a 10-year sort of, what's next? Are you going to do another one? Yeah. Have you had enough?
No.
Okay, Breaking Out. It's in cinemas all over the place, isn't it?
It is. It's nationwide. And if you go to breakingoutfilm.com, you'll be able to see where it's playing around the
country. All right, go on, Michael. Michael McCormack. Thanks a million, Michael. Take it easy. And by the way, drone footage in it is fantastic, isn't it?
Wonderful.
Wonderful, yeah.
Wonderful. This young lad called Jack Fanning was involved in that.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.